is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
China, the balloon story, aggression in the guise of meteorological research or surveillance or accidentally blown off course. However, China's aggression takes many forms, not just balloons or brutalizing people in the high Himalayas or crushing democracy in Hong Kong. It also takes the form of pushing the islands of Oceania to choose Taiwan or People's Republic. Taiwan or People's Republic. One such story, Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, has been telling for more than 2 years. It is now a defeat. That is, the democracy-loving people of the Solomon Islands have been defeated right now by the People's Republic of China. The story itself is instructive. Cleo, a very good evening to you. I take us back to the fall, the summer fall of 2021. A man named Sudani, who had been ill and needed medical attention. He has just arrived back in his province of Malaita. He's the leader of Malaita. He's recovering from his medical treatments in Taiwan. What did he find when he came back? What was the situation for him, for Malaita, and in the Solomons? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Thank you for covering the story. And thank you for bringing up Hong Kong, because just to frame this this whole event, it's useful to remember what happened to Hong Kong, because that's sort of the goal for China across the region, is to Hong Kongize a lot of the countries that are now independent and democratic across the region. And we've seen this happen, this play out in slow motion over the past 3 years in Solomon Islands. In 2019, Solomon Islands switched from Taiwan to China. But when I say Solomon Islands, what I really mean is this was a unilateral decision made by the Prime Minister of the Solomon Islands, Manasseh Sogavare. So there are two people involved in what we're going to talk about. One is the Prime Minister, Manasseh Sogavare, who is a pro-PRC proxy. And the other is, as you mentioned, the Premier of Malaita Province, Daniel Suidani, who, as you said, he got sick. And this was in the context of the country as a whole. Solomon Islands had switched from Taiwan to China under Sogavare. But Malaita Province, under Suidani, said they want to stay with Taiwan. Or more precisely, they don't want Chinese companies in their province because they know what it does to their province, to their people, politically, economically, socially, in every way. That made Suidani target number one for the pro-PRC leadership in the capital, backed by enormous amount of Chinese money. They set about trying to take him out politically. Now what happened? Yeah, sorry?
No. Now it's November and the confrontation. What happens?
Yeah. So he came back from the medical treatment. They tried to deny him medical treatment because he wouldn't let in the PRC into his province. He, as you mentioned, Taiwan stepped in, made sure he stayed alive. Nobody else intervened. The Australians didn't intervene. Nobody else did, but the Taiwanese stepped up. He came back and he found that there was an attempted vote of no confidence in the provincial assembly there. The system is very different, but it's kind of like an impeachment where they try to get him out of power. He's such a popular leader that the population of Malaita, a large section of it, came and blocked entrance into the assembly to make it difficult for the people who've been paid off by the PRC via Sogavare to go in and table that motion. So it was withdrawn and he stayed as premier of Malaita. But that was such a kind of overt thing that it fed into the anti-PRC, anti-corruption feeling across the whole country. And there were demonstrations in front of the national legislature in the capital, Honiara. The police shot tear gas into the crowd. The crowd went a little bit crazy, started to riot. The reports are that they were kind of directed towards the Chinatown area, and Chinatown was burnt down. That became the excuse for the Australians to send in troops. What that actually did was keep pro-PRC Sogavare in power, because the police were at that point recommending to Soguvari that he step aside. He was so unpopular. He was creating these situations seemingly almost on purpose that the police were saying, look, we can't protect you. Please reconsider your position. And it's a parliamentary system. So that's a legitimate way of somebody of government's changing. But by sending in the troops, the Australians basically secured his position, secured the position of the pro-PRC corrupt leadership in Solomons.
And then the Chinese showed up. And when did they come in?
So they came in pretty soon after the riots in November. And the riots were over. The people were cleaning up. The things were calm, but the Australians showed up, and politically, Soguvari could turn to the members of parliament who were deciding whether or not to support him and say, look, I've got both Australia and China backing me, so you better back me also. And they did. And he stayed in power. But the appearance of the Australians also gave justification for Soguvari to then invite in Chinese police or whoever they were, under the pretext of having them protect the Chinese community. Soon after that, he signed that security deal between the Solomons, which meant actually him, and China, which allows for PLA forces to come into the Solomons to protect Chinese citizens and Chinese economic investments.
And the Australians left during this period. They just went back to Canberra.
The Australians are still there, and the Australians have actually given Soguvari's police force weapons. I mean, it's extremely difficult for me to rationalize.
Wait. I want to make sure. We've got PLA operatives and Australian police at the same coffee bar?
Yeah. They're backing the same guy, the same corrupt guy.
All right, let's go to more ironies. It is the summer of 2022, July,
But just to go back, because a lot of people are going, how can that be? So I've asked a lot of Australians, what are you thinking? And the thing that I keep getting back is, oh, we need to protect we need to work with the government in power. That's their justification. But the government wouldn't be in power if they weren't propping him up, if they hadn't propped him up. But that's the justification you get. You know, there are a lot of other potential rationales involved. Some of them may be, there may be, who knows? I don't want to speculate. But it is from a Western security perspective, from a Five Eyes perspective, this really needs to be highlighted, that the Australians grabbed the lead, so to speak, on dealing with Solomon Islands, and they let all of this happen under their watch.
Summer of 2022, the U.S. gets in the game late. There is an important event. The Battle of Guadalcanal begins in the summer. The remembrance of it begins in the summer of 2022, attended by two very important people, Wendy Sherman, the Deputy Secretary of State, and Carolyn Kennedy, the ambassador, I believe, at the time. And so what we're looking at is a major piece of American government shows up at Guadalcanal to celebrate. All of the dignitaries were invited, but Soguvari did not show up. It was at the moment we knew that China had won.
So, yeah, and this was the commemoration of the 80th anniversary of the beginning of the Battle of Guadalcanal. Both Ambassador Kennedy, who's ambassador to Australia, and Secretary Sherman have family members, very direct family members, Sherman's father and, as you know, JFK, who fought in that battle, in the Pacific Theater. And Soguvari did not show up for that event. If you were paying attention, you would have, that wasn't the moment, but it was a pretty obvious snub along with many others.
Detail here. Everybody in Oceania knew that he didn't show up, right, Cleo? It wasn't a secret.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there were headlines. Everybody knew he didn't show up. And it's not just disrespectful to the Americans who lost their lives, but also to the Solomon Islanders who lost their lives in that battle. There were very many. And Solomon Islanders, they're the ones who saved John F. Kennedy. They're the ones who, you know, really turned the tide of that battle. So it was disrespectful to his own people as well.
Is this the time that the State Department announces we're going to reopen the embassy? We're going to reopen an embassy in Guadalcanal. Was it during that visit or afterwards?
Well, it had been in the works for a few years. So there had been sort of soft announcements, but it was reiterated then.
Now we come to the events of these last weeks. Back to Malaita, the province. It's a separate island from Guadalcanal, and what looks to be a very carefully planned opportunity to elbow Sudiani out again, and this time it was successful. How did they do it?
So they bought off half plus one of the provincial legislature. And this is actually, for those following Chinese political warfare, this was an interesting one because, as mentioned, Malaita had blocked major Chinese investment in the province. And usually the way they buy up the local elite is by bringing in big companies with a lot of money and then using the companies as fronts for buying up political leadership. But because the Malaita government had blocked the big businesses, what they did was they announced the setting up of a mini hospital. So you can't say no to a hospital, right? But through this mini hospital, they started to have another conduit through which they could launder money to pay off locals, apart from your basic envelopes full of cash.
And we come to the showdown. Did Sudani and his Ford and his party, did they know this was coming, or was it entirely kept secret from them?
They knew it was coming, and it's not really a kind of his grouping. MARA isn't a political party; it's sort of an umbrella organization because it's it is actually quite a popular government. But they knew it was coming. They knew who had been bought off, but also it was triggered through what they considered to be an illegal process. It's not worth going into the details, but the Speaker of Parliament was involved and stuff. So they had lodged a complaint to the High Court, and on the day of the vote, they actually didn't even show up for the assembly, first of all, because they thought it was illegal. And second of all, they haven't said this, but I think because they wanted to keep their supporters away from parliament, they knew they didn't have the numbers, they knew they would lose, and there was major armed police presence, and they didn't want to give a justification for the police to shoot on their supporters. So to keep their people safe, they just didn't show up, but also they didn't want to legitimize what was going on in parliament.
Did Canberra, did Washington, did the American embassy know this was going to happen?
Well, if I knew it was going to happen, I assume they knew it was going to happen. We talked about it before. You and I have talked about it before it happened, and I wrote about it the week before. So if me sitting all the way over here can know it's happening, I would assume they know as well.
And the result is that Sudani and his umbrella group are now elbowed aside out of Malaita. They have a court process, but you're not optimistic. And in your interview with him, he's not optimistic.
Now, in my experience in dealing with the PRC, by the time the big move comes, the kill move comes, they've cut off the lines of escape. So, and this goes back to PRC, the three warfares, political warfare, you've got media warfare, psychological warfare, and lawfare. Lawfare is very important for the Chinese. So I would expect that by the time they do something that can go to the courts, they feel they've got enough control over the courts so it won't threaten the move.
I'm speaking with Cleo Pascal. She's writing most recently her interview with Daniel Sudani at the Sunday Guardian. She's a senior fellow for the Indo-Pacific at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. We've taken up to the point now where we're going to turn to what does this mean for the rest of Oceania? What does it mean for Australia and for Five Eyes, especially what it means for the immediate future, but in the aggression by the PRC against its neighborhood? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and America's largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal law enforcement agencies through our many varied programs, including free safety equipment donations, free officer survival training, cash donations, and condolence letters to the family of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty. USDSA also offers college scholarships for the dependent children of law enforcement, along with the Citizen Awareness Program and thank you cards to law enforcement. These are just some of the ways United States Deputy Sheriff's Association assists America's law enforcement and the citizens they serve. For more information about United States Deputy Sheriff's Association or to see how you can help, visit www.usdeputy.org. United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, taking training to the next level, because lives are on the line.